My name is Alica Kačengová and this is Restarts in Tech. With guests from various tech professions, I talk about the challenges they faced in their beginnings and later, about how they overcame them, and about what you can learn from them. Because wherever they are now, at some point, they were at the beginning. With the head of Technology Center, Robert Campbell, we will talk about the journey from coder to manager, about the importance of soft skills, and about doing just a bit more than the baseline. Hello, Rob. Thank you for being my guest and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Do you remember your first contacts with computer or technologies?
Oh, I don't remember a specific event when I first came into contact with computers. I sort of have this like hazy series of pictures in my head. They were old mini computers made by a company called Wang, which no longer exists. And they were running, I'm sure, an early version of DOS. And one of my earliest memories is also running a very early version of Windows and playing with paint. And I actually remember it being black and white. So that, I think that suggests how old it was and how old I am, perhaps.
I also remember black and white.
Okay. Okay.
How did your relationship with computers develop? What made you choose it as your field of study?
Yeah, so in the beginning for me, computers were just something that were around our house everywhere because my father was a programmer. He wrote his own accounting system in COBOL for those mini computers. And believe it or not, his COBOL accounting system is still in use today by a small number of clients. He actually built a company around it, and that company still exists, and he still maintains that system. Although, of course, you know, over the years, there's been fewer and fewer clients using such an antiquated system. But he was a programmer, and so they were always in our house. And for me, they were always just a toy, more or less. So, you know, something to play with. Whether it was early applications like Paint or early video games as well. I remember spending quite a bit of time on those. And then I also remember a couple times where my dad would pay me a bit of money to do like data entry for him. And, you know, so that's how I got started. That's my earliest memory of engaging with computers. So I guess if I look back, my whole life, I was a very anxious, introverted child. And so I think that really drove me towards computers during my childhood because, you know, they were interesting toys that I could interact with by myself, you know, at the cost, I suppose, of playing more with other kids. And I always felt comfortable around them. And that continued as I grew up. And so, you know, the video games changed, and at a certain point, I started playing around with programming as well. But there was, you know, they always played a big role in my life. They were a big part of my life, and certainly as the internet developed as well. I remember the early internet. You know, when I was young, we had almost a fake version of the internet. It was because back then there was a lot of walled gardens. You know, so we had a service provider called America Online. And the earliest versions of that, you couldn't even really easily access like the proper internet. It was almost like its own, almost like a giant BBS type thing. But I, you know, once that happened, I was spending even more time playing with computers and exploring the internet and all that. And so for me, it just was like a natural extension of that. Like I never thought to myself, oh, maybe I should, you know, what should I study? Or, you know, let me evaluate different options. It was always just, this is a huge part of me, and I want it to continue. And it was just very, very natural for me to pursue computer science.
And how was it? Because like often, or at least I met people who went to study computer science, and it was something different than expected. So how was the studying for you?
Yeah, it was a little weird. I mean, I guess what defined it for me in university was actually what I had done in high school, or what I guess here is called secondary school, which is, I think, uniquely or somewhat uniquely for a United States high school, I did have the opportunity to specialize a little bit. We had a, it was called AP, a college level computer science program that I attended for 4 years. And it was very, I'd say in some sense rigorous. It was very heavily focused on the practical. There was a lot of practical programming. You know, we started in Pascal, moved to C, then C++, and ended in Java over those 4 years. And there was a ton of code being written by myself and the other students. And so I think that when I went to university, there was a portion of the curriculum that was the more practical programming side that for me was just super simple. You know, like I could, you know, I'm not eager to admit it, but you know, I could skip some of the classes and, you know, pass the tests because I had been doing this for years, either in my personal time or at my secondary school. And then there was the more, I guess, novel theoretical side. That was newer to me, you know, because I had been very heavily focused on the practical because it was a toy. And I guess for me, I guess one thing that defined my career, and I guess it's a trade-off, is that I was always, my interest was always in getting something working and less interested in how it worked. So I think a lot of folks who feel that way can end up being quite bad programmers because, you know, if you don't understand exactly what's happening under the abstractions, you know, you can definitely get yourself into trouble or get other people into trouble. So I will admit to being sort of biased in that direction. But what it also meant is that I never really pursued much of the theory on my own. So I guess that, you know, for me, university was about finally forcing me to some extent to learn the theory. But I enjoyed it. I never had a regret that this was the path that I chose.
I remember when we talked earlier, you mentioned that another important aspect was the social aspect.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, I spent a lot of time on the social side, you know, hanging out with friends, going to parties. I joined a fraternity when I was in university. And, you know, absolutely that came at the cost to some extent of following like the proper academic side of things. And, you know, I guess an initial reaction to that could be, well, that's a mistake. And sometimes, you know, I've wondered if it's a mistake. You know, I always feel that, you know, maybe I could have learned more, especially on the theoretical side. But I think that my general sense is that actually for me, very, very personally as an individual, that was not a bad trade at all, because what I've seen in my career so far, just for me, is that because I was so introverted and anxious, what I really needed to learn most at university was not how to program, or even the theory of computer science, let's say, but rather how to interact with other humans. It sounds pretty basic, but to be perfectly frank, I think that was a more valuable lesson given where I was at. You know, I was definitely capable already of supporting myself and a family just with my programming skills. Of course, everyone can always improve. But I think that my lack of social skills, let's say, or soft skills, was a real risk to my ability to be a successful professional. And so looking back, I actually don't think I regret spending that time in the, you know, just embracing the social side of what university is in the United States. You know, for example, just my activities in my fraternity were I think hugely useful. It was one of my earliest sort of leadership opportunities. Even just taking, you know, some minor offices in that fraternity and being around all the, sort of a diverse group of people, and sort of having to navigate that, and you know, sometimes badly, but learning. So I appreciate that experience.
And how did you start your career after the university?
Yeah, that's weird too, because it's hard to pin down exactly when I started, because, you know, in some sense, I started at the beginning of my use of computers. I mean,
so let's say first proper 8 hours a day
job. Right, proper 8 hours a day job. Okay. So yeah, we won't count the data entry as a 12-year-old or whatever it was. I mean,
data entry meant like writing some data to spreadsheet.
Or when I was very young, I'm guessing like 12, but I don't actually know. You know, my father would have these giant reams, and they weren't standard A4 size paper. They were these giant reams on like a dot matrix printer of data, and like, you know, names, addresses, phone numbers, and then, you know, he gave me a few bucks to type them into forms in a DOS application, and, you know, there was 2,000 of them, and, you know, in some sense, I guess, that was my first job, but it's hard to pin down a little bit, because my dad had his own company, and that company started off with a pretty heavy focus on programming, although it evolved with the industry, and it evolved to stay alive through things like, you know, Y2K and the dot-com bubble bursting, and it now operates very differently. It's focused on other things, like accounting software and managing networks. But he gave me employment. He gave me some of my earliest employment that used computers. I had other, you know, random jobs, lifeguard and working in a retail company. But So I worked for him. He would have clients that would need to just like build a website. And so I remember, building websites in ASP. Not ASP.NET, just ASP. And so that was quite early. But I guess that was more like a sort of part-time work, you know, consulting, if you want to call it that, or contracting. My first sort of 9-to-5 full-time job was working for a startup while I was finishing up my university degree. So I think it was in my last year or my second to last year when I started working at a startup in Pittsburgh. I went to the University of Pittsburgh, and I was their only programmer. And I was writing PHP for them, and I built an e-commerce platform for them that ran their web store, and also a bit of a back-end application. I want to say it was in Java, that ran in the warehouses of a produce company that supplied them with food. Basically, their business model was a little bit similar to like Rohlik, mm-hmm. where they were looking to deliver primarily fresh produce to people. But this was like, you know, a long time ago. This was like in 2004 or 5. I think it was too early. A good idea, but too early.
And you said you were the only developer.
Yeah.
How was it? Because I remember from my experience that, like, in the beginning, I thought that software development, like coding, is not for me, because I had no one to ask, and I got stuck, and that's why I thought it was not for me. So how was it for you? Did you read a lot of documentation? Or
yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I guess what helped me is that up until that point, being a sort of individual coder type was actually for me the norm. Because I was either, you know, I was just building stuff for my dad by myself, or most of my school projects were built out by myself, or, you know, I was just building toy apps for myself by myself, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think it was perfectly, it felt natural to me to just be building this thing by myself. That's not to say I wouldn't, you know, run into issues. And back then we didn't have Stack Overflow. I don't remember anything like Stack Overflow. But luckily we still had the internet, and, you know, I do remember, you know, it required a lot of just self-motivated figuring things out. And I wouldn't claim to have been a fantastic programmer. You know, thinking back to some of the ways I built some of those systems, it's quite embarrassing. And if I had been working with more experienced colleagues, I certainly wouldn't have built them in that way. I would have known better. That's sort of the environment I was in, and that's sort of the path I took. And so for me, it was a bigger shock when I actually moved to the Czech Republic, got a job in a team, and had to work with other programmers. That was actually the bigger shock for me.
And what was your motivation to move to Czech Republic?
Ooh.
Because like often, I think there are a lot of software developers who consider US and especially Silicon Valley as the place to be for a software developer.
For sure. I think it was a combination of factors. It was, you know, I was in my final year of university, and so I was forced to consider what comes next. And I had really enjoyed the freedom and the sort of the newness and the excitement and the sort of just all the novelty and different things and different people that came with going to university, particularly a university in a different city from the one I grew up in. And I had a sense that I wanted that to continue. So I didn't want to just like go home and just get a boring job, where everything was known. I wanted some adventure. And so that was something I felt quite strongly. And then I suppose the other thing that I felt quite strongly was I was still at that point more focused on, I want to say, more like the people side or the social side of life than I was on the coding side. You know, I still enjoyed coding. I was still very passionate about coding, but it wasn't what was driving me at that moment in time. So it wasn't like I was looking for the best coding environment on the planet or the best coding experience on the planet. Because to your point, if I had been, I would have gone to Silicon Valley or California or something like that. But that wasn't what was driving me. It was more the people and social side. And so when my friend, you know, mentioned that he was going to study abroad in Prague, you know, for someone like myself who had never left the country, you know, that sounded like an adventure. And the more I thought about it, the more I liked it. And then what also helped, I was still very anxious. I still am, right? And so there was still a lot of hesitancy in me. But I think another thing that helped me was I had I'd sort of broken up with my girlfriend at exactly that point in time as well. And so that was acting as a bit of a push for me to do something a bit daring perhaps as well. So I it worked out. It worked out well.
So you came to Prague and I guess you didn't speak Czech.
Yeah.
And you were looking for a job.
Well, interestingly, but you know, so before I came out here, as you know, when my friend was sort of joking around with the notion of me coming out with him, I had sent my CV to two different, we did like the simplest internet search, like, you know, developer in Prague. And the top two results were like DHL and Monster Technologies. And I just sent my CV to both and I sort of forgot about it for a little while. And then they called me and started interviewing me. And after a bunch of interviews, I ended up with two offers from both of those companies. And so I actually had a job with a relocation lined up before I left. But it was still very much a shock for me because I'd never left the country before. And of course, yes, I didn't speak the language. And again, I'm just such an anxious person. Like for me, I just remember massive anxiety just trying to understand, like, how am I going to get from the airport to the company apartment? How am I going to get from the company apartment to the office? How does the public transportation system work? You know, how did the Yizdinki work? You know, like, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy to do that, I would say, for me.
I when I came to Prague, like, I could almost speak Czech. I spoke Slovak, and I think without maps in my phone, I would be lost.
And a lot of people are fine with being lost, you know, because it's not the end of the world. But for someone like me with my anxiety, like that for me can be a very, like really bad feeling, you know.
You would have to ask people.
Yeah, that makes it worse. Yeah, exactly.
How did it go? Like, how did your position develop? I'm especially interested because we are still talking about you being a software developer, but now we know you are not just a developer.
That's true, yeah.
So how did you progress?
Yeah. You know, the proper career advice that everyone always gives is, you know, have a plan, have goals. And I do genuinely believe that is the best way to do it because, you know, if you don't have a goal, if you don't have a target, if you don't have something to point yourself towards, you know, I think that, how do you know you're making progress? And without progress, you know, how do you avoid that feeling of sort of stagnation and despair, I think, to some extent? Having said all that, I didn't have a plan and I didn't have a goal except to explore. And so my career developed just very, very organically. So I started as a developer in a sort of regular dev team. And then I was moved to what was called, it was something like an incubator in Monster Technologies. It's called Monster Labs. And that was a lot of fun. You know, the notion was that we would sort of come up with new business ideas, new uses of Monster's data, for example. And we would sort of prototype those ideas, you know, implement them, and then pitch them internally to business heads for possible adoption. And that was just very interesting and exciting. And so I had this sort of, I had the passion for the tech, and I was just, you know, doing a bunch of coding at work. And then I was going out after work with like all these new friends from all these new countries, which was, you know, totally new experience for me. You know, a German friend, a French friend, a Spanish friend, a Czech friend. It was really cool. And then they closed that division, unfortunately, because it wasn't making any money. And I was moved back to like a traditional development team. And then one of my friends at the time, he switched companies. So he moved to a different company called IDC. And I decided to go with him. They were looking to expand. And I was hired, I don't actually remember if I was hired as like a, just a regular sort of software developer or senior software developer, but almost immediately I was asked to sort of help build out this team. And so I don't think I actually was going there to immediately be a team lead. It might have been, but regardless of what it was sold as, that's what it quickly became. And so I, for the first time in my life, I had formal responsibility for other developers. I hired, you know, some small number of other developers and managed them. I spent five years there. And towards the end, I think it was after 4 years, I was asked to take over multiple teams. So I was asked to become sort of their development manager in the country. And so I became responsible for the teams in Prague and Ostrava, at least for the business that I was working for. And that was, of course, the first time I was sort of a manager of managers. And again, none of that was really my plan. I think that there were reasons why those opportunities were sort of given to me, and I seemed to do well enough with them. We can go into that if you want, but you know, that was where I made, I guess, some of my initial moves, and that is prior to my current employer. After IDC, I was asked by a senior Barclays manager to start a new team here, and so I again became a team lead and built out a team here. And that was before becoming the site lead.
Yeah, so you said that you think there were reasons why you think you were given those opportunities. And I'm certainly interested.
Okay.
What do you think the reasons were?
So the first reason that I want to give, first and foremost, because I don't think it ever gets enough respect or attention, is just luck. I think in, you know, at various points in my career, I was at the right place in the right time. I also benefited from being, I think, a good enough technologist who is also a native English speaker, who had a passion for technology, which helped drive me. But certainly just, you know, being in the right place, the right time, maybe with the right language, you know, these things certainly helped a whole lot. And so I've definitely been very, very lucky in my career. You know, opportunities that come up quite rarely have sort of sprung up when I've been in front of them, let's say.
But was there also something what you did or how you did stuff?
I think so. Like the model I have in my head for these sorts of things is that hard work and skills buys you more lottery tickets. You still have to win the lottery, and you may not win the lottery, but you can definitely influence the chance through hard work and skills. And I think what I did do, what helped me increase my chance and get me more lottery tickets was I was always doing a bit more. You know, I was very passionate about the technology throughout my career, and that passion always drove me to do things, to have opinions, to speak up, to try to change something, to try to build something. And I also was always bothered by problems. Like if I saw something that could be done better, in my opinion, or broken, it would bother me and I'd have a tendency to want to do something about it. And I think at the end of the day, all of that, what it really meant in summary was that I tended to be seen and heard, and I tended to have an impact outside of just my regular job. So I think a lot of people make perhaps a mistake. I mean, you know, only the individual knows, but they make perhaps the mistake of just, you know, doing what's required of them in their job and leaving it at that, and then going home. And I think the opportunity that they're missing is that there's a minority of people who just do a little bit more. It doesn't have to be a lot more. It doesn't even always have to go really well, necessarily. But just by doing a little bit more, these are the people that are naturally, I guess, rewarded in terms of career growth. These are the people that get promoted. These are the people that are given more responsibility. These are the people that, you know, when an opportunity comes up for a new project or a new role, you know, it's often given to them first. So I think that a small amount of additional effort ends up going a long way when it comes to career growth and career opportunities. And a lot of folks just miss that. And I think there's even data that backs this up. I remember hearing a statistic that just, you know, in one measure, people that spent 10% more time at work ended up making something like 40% more money over their careers or something like that.
But it's not just about time. It's also
It's, for me, it's not about, I mean, look, I'm a coder, you know, like the best coder in the world is the one who writes one line of code and it's crystal clear and it does everything you need to do, right? Code not written is perhaps better than code written. It's not about time. I think the study was done in an industry where time might matter more, perhaps. But I see the same exact dynamic in development, which is, you know, people that just put in a bit more extra effort differentiate themselves and are given just this additional opportunity. And I think that's exactly what happened to me. And it's not, again, that wasn't my plan. It's not like I consciously said, oh, I want to do a little bit more because I want to grow my career. It was just I had a passion for technology. I had opinions. I had a bias towards action, I think. I wanted to fix things. And so I think I was very visible. I was very vocal. I was seen as someone who acted. You know, there were times I had, I hope, a positive impact. And so I think those, that's something that differentiated me. Bought me quite a few lottery tickets, I suppose.
Yeah. People won't tell you about the opportunities if they don't know you.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's like, a lot of times, if we think about more formal forms of progression, like promotion, a lot of times that's just a reflection of the reality that's catching up. Like what I mean is, if you look at a lot of the sort of the promotions that are done or whatever, you see that the person already had almost voluntarily expanded their role and just started like having a bigger impact. And then later on, they're just more formally recognized for that thing that is now bigger. In the form of a promotion or whatever. I think a lot more of your role and your responsibilities is up to you than you think, because there's usually plenty of problems to solve. You know, if your eyes are open, you'll see problems everywhere. And if you just decided to fix some of them, you just also decided to increase your role and your responsibilities to some extent. And, you know, who knows, sometimes formal recognition of that can follow.
As you already mentioned, you had this first job as a manager of managers, but then you went to work for Barclays, where you work now as well. So what journey did you go through here?
Yeah, it was a weird one for a couple of reasons. I mean, first, it was in some sense a step back because, again, I went from being a manager of managers at IDC to just building out a single team, you know, which is something I'd already done before. The other thing that I think made it a bit odd was I had never worked for a very large organization, an organization the size of Barclays with, you know, let's say 80 to 100,000 employees. And I had certainly never worked in the banking industry before. And so I've never worked for such a heavily regulated organization. And so for me, it was definitely a culture shock. You know, I had worked at a startup. I had done the consulting, you know. I'd worked for some, like, let's call it medium-sized international companies. But it was definitely a culture shock to me because, you know, most of my career was pretty freewheeling. You know, I could, you know, I could get whatever hardware I wanted. I could, you know, install whatever applications I wanted. I could, you know, not that I advise it, but you know, I could, you know, patch production.
just a note for the listeners, like here, at Barclays we can't install whatever applications we want.
Yeah, it's like, so for me, I didn't know what that was, that packaging system. It was like, oh, there's a packaging system that holds approved software, and this is the software that you use. And if it's not, you know, if it's not approved for use and it's not packaged, then you're probably not using it unless you know take it through a process and all that. And that was definitely a surprise to me. And I think what made it a hard transition for me as well is that I came in the middle of a pretty tumultuous time for Barclays. So I think it was like maybe a month after I joined, the CEO and the rest of senior management were replaced. So, and you know, there was, let's say, reorganizations that came more or less right when I was joining. So like the teams that I was supposed to be responsible for, I wasn't responsible for anymore, except maybe I was and it wasn't clear. And it was just really, it was really confusing. And there wasn't as much hand-holding as I might have expected. So yeah, it was a tough transition for me. And it took me a while, I think, to really get my feet on some sort of steady ground. But, you know, by the same token, I'd been in that sort of situation before. That's exactly how I felt when I came to Prague. You know, everything was foreign and strange and different, and my anxiety levels went up. But it was also new and interesting and could be an adventure if it went all right. So yeah, that was sort of the initial days. But then, you know, after a while, it settled, and we had a pretty awesome team that we built. And I spent, you know, the first 3 years, let's say, actually more than that, it was probably the first 5 years, basically building out that population. We started with like 7 people plus me, and by the time I left, it was like over 40. It was, a success. I was a manager of managers again. I was mostly, you know, line managing, but I also had, I got myself involved in a variety of actual projects as well. So I still had some functional work that I was doing, regulatory project, things like that, some project in the entitlement space and compliance space. And so it was kind of a mix. I wasn't necessarily coding for Barclays in that role, but I was still close to some of the projects. And I learned a lot about the research business, which is the business that we were supporting.
And didn't you miss coding? When we talked earlier, mentioned something about, like, you know, as a coder, you would despise, you know, of spreadsheets and forms and bureaucracy, and suddenly you were here.
Yeah.
I guess those projects you said that you were coding involved some spreadsheets.
Yeah, I mean, so I still found a couple opportunities to write, like, small amounts of code, and definitely during that time, I still... Like, if you asked me what I did, I wouldn't tell you that I was, like, an IT manager. I would tell you I was a programmer. And I was also programming quite a bit at that point in my life, in my spare time as well, at home. So I was still coding, not as much as I had before, but I still really strongly identified as a programmer. And I almost felt that there was something noble about that. I can't describe it. I know it sounds silly, but I almost felt like there was something noble and pure about this pursuit of, let's call it engineering or what have you. And I almost looked down on what we call the soft skills. I had this feeling, this sense that, like, good work should speak for itself. And, it's so silly to talk about now, but I think it was a very sort of naive and immature view of even proper software development. I think I held on to that view for a shockingly long period of time, where I should have gotten the point and the message along the way that, a successful software project in 2022, you know, 98% of the time is a group effort. And, you know, if you can't communicate effectively with other humans, you know, that project will suffer in various ways. And I think it took me almost my current role to really have that message sort of pounded into my brain properly. But nowadays,
I think I've read somewhere, maybe it was said by Uncle Bob Martin, that software development is a social exercise.
Yeah. I think there was almost this, like, I don't know what to call it, this, like, heroic past where, you know, you know, Linus could make Linux in the beginning, let's say, by himself, or, you know, Theo could create OpenBSD in the beginning. Again, he was building on the work of even then, he was building on the work of so many other people. But, you know, there were these sort of like famous armies of one to some extent. But even they don't last, you know, even they didn't last. I mean, it's just you can't get around the fact that thousands of collaborators are required for a project of that magnitude. Yeah, I think it's an antiquated idea, perhaps. Maybe in the 70s, there was, you know, lots of individual coders who are, you know, releasing like Emacs and things like that. But yeah.
And so you were already manager of managers.
Yeah.
And how did you get to this manager of managers role?
Yeah,
you have now, just for the listeners, you are now the site manager of our whole site, which is quite big.
That's right. That was my biggest jump. That was my biggest transition. That was probably, in my whole career, the biggest challenge, the biggest struggle, but also the most rewarding one. So I guess it was around 2017. We needed a site lead. And I was asked if I would be the site lead. And at the time, I declined. And I declined exactly for that worldview that I just described having, which was, I thought, look, I'm a programmer. I want to stay close to the technology. You know, I want to be involved in projects. That's what I want to do. My view of being the site lead was like, it's all politics and administration and, you know, paperwork, you know, and I was very sort of dismissive of it. And so I declined. So I went back to my job. And I think one of the reasons I was asked was exactly the reason I was asked previously at my previous employers to take on bigger responsibility. I think I was still the same person. I was still kind of outgoing in terms of trying to fix things, trying to be proactive, having opinions, trying to have an impact, make things better as best I could. Wasn't always successful. But I think I was seen as sort of a doer, and I think it's one of the things that again differentiated me and probably why I was asked. I was also at that point one of the more senior people on the site. I had been recently promoted, I believe, to director, which within a bank, you know, director is like, it's like the second most senior formal grade that you can get. And then later on, sometime later, I was asked a second time to lead the site. And I was asked the second time, well, it was with more, let's say, with more force. I joke about it now.
You were volunteered.
Yeah, well, it wasn't exactly volunteered, but, it, you know, the person doing the asking was a very difficult person to say no to, let's say that. And I think more to the point, he had a vision. He had a vision to invest in Prague. Like he had come here, he had visited here, he had visited his teams here, his technical teams here, and he was blown away by the talent that he had on his teams here. He was new to Barclays. So he was a new senior guy who came in and he was flying around the world, visiting all his tech teams, all his dev teams, and he stopped here and he was just blown away. He was wowed. And he was so enthusiastic. And so for him, you know, it was crystal clear, like, these guys get it. I want to grow these teams. This is where I want to build software. What do I need in order to be successful to do that? And he just so happened to be one of the largest stakeholders in the site. And so for him, growing his teams meant adding hundreds of people. And to do that, you know, the wider site needed to be, you know, we needed a site lead. You know, we needed to invest in the site. We needed to make some changes to facilitate that sort of growth, let's say. And so he asked me, you know, will you lead the site? Because this is what I want to do. And so his vision was very attractive. Because I also happened to believe in the site, you know. I thought I had a fantastic team. We had fantastic engineers here. I believed in what we were doing, believed in the mission. And so I think his goals and mine aligned. I wanted to see Barclays in Prague grow and prosper and continue building, you know, awesome technology for the bank. And he wanted to do the same. And so I said yes. I think technically I actually said something like maybe.
But you didn't say no?
I didn't say no. That was it. I didn't say no. And I think he interpreted that as yes. And that was good enough for the both of us, I suppose. And so that's what I started doing. And it was probably the most rewarding 3-4 years now of my career. Like I said, the most challenging. And it started right away. The challenges started right away because, you know, we're supposed to do this together. You know, trying to make significant change within a large organization takes an incredible amount of skill and effort and time because, you know, it is a bit like moving the Titanic. It's like, okay, it takes a long time to, you know, turn a ship of that size with that sort of momentum. But on the flip side, if you turn it, you just turn the Titanic. You know, like, that's pretty cool. I thought we were going to do it together, but, you know, I ended up, for a variety of reasons, having to quite quickly go it alone to some extent. Although along the way, I did pick up some good support from across our management team. What helped was, you know, the senior managers in technology, they all loved their teams here. And so they were huge supporters of the site. And so for me, it was just very simple to go out to them and get their support for what I needed done. And, you know, so I wasn't alone for long, let's say. And that was helpful. But yeah, I mean, there was challenges from the very beginning because, you know, I immediately had to get myself really deep into a bunch of topics I wasn't familiar with, and I wasn't, they were the sort of topics that if you had asked me, you know, just a couple years prior, I would have thought would bore me to tears, you know? Like, I had to get super involved in a bunch of real estate discussions and projects. You know, I had to change some of the lease agreements that we had here in Prague to make sure we had the space to grow. You know, I had to get involved in a whole bunch of, like, infrastructure kind of discussions and topics, which at least was closer to my heart. But things like HR, real estate, legal, vendor management was a big one, sourcing, procurement, corporate communications, you know, government relations, marketing. These are all areas that I had to, along the way, sort of get into the weeds on, you know, dive into and learn a lot about to achieve the outcome I was trying to achieve for Prague. And I guess what shocked me is how motivated I was. I thought these would be things that would bore me to tears, that I wouldn't enjoy doing. But what I found was that they were all problems to solve. And, you know, the complexity was interesting. And there was a lot of similarities with, you know, a complex software system. Especially if I think of something like legal, you know, going through a contract, understanding the rules and the constraints and, you know, how it was meant to work. And I think what motivated me was I believed in the mission. You know, I believed in Prague and I wanted to do this, and I saw myself making progress, and that was massively encouraging. I think the results, you know, because I was winning enough, I was having enough of an impact that just kept me going and kept me excited. So I was doing everything except coding, I think.
Were there challenges when you felt that you were afraid?
Of course, yeah. Like, because, oh my God, yes. I mean, this sort of role, to be a site lead, you know, there are definitely times when you have to get up in front of hundreds of people and, you know, hopefully do a pretty good job speaking to them. And, you know, there were definitely moments where, well, there was many reasons to be afraid. You know, I guess to continue on this thread, public speaking, right? So just being a public figure of any sort, you know, just standing up in front of large groups of people and trying to say intelligent things that don't put them to sleep, you know, that is not something that came naturally to me at all, you know, as an anxious introvert. You know, I was terrified. I still get very, very scared. And there were certain points in my career where I had to do this under even more stressful conditions than you might normally expect. Like, I remember having to drive straight from the hospital after the birth of my second son to a conference center to stand up on stage in front of hundreds of people to explain to them, you know, how Barclays was looking to support your transfer from a vendor to permanent employment at Barclays. And so I was always afraid. I think what surprised me, and I started, you know, I learned a little bit along the way, just reading a little bit about psychology and listening to it on these long podcasts I would listen to on my commute, was that, you know, you don't teach people not to be afraid. What you can teach people quite successfully is to be brave. And the way that you can do that is through managed exposure therapy. So if you're afraid of public speaking, you know, what you should do is, you know, start by just giving a presentation to, you know, one or two people. Then you can try giving it, you know, that you know, then 10 people, then 20 people, then add people you don't know, and you do it 50 times. And each time you're still going to be afraid getting up on stage, but you're also going to be a little bit braver. At the very least, you'll start, you know, as you're walking up on stage, you'll realize that you've done this before. And probably it was, you were successful doing it before. And so that's kind of how I ended up managing it, is that, you know, I would go up on stage and I'd be terrified, out of my mind sometimes. But somehow, and I can never describe this, it was always a very bizarre experience for me, I would start speaking and it would work. And then I'd get off the stage and I'd wonder how I just did that. And that happened enough times now in my career that I can at least convince myself that if I can just, you know, open my mouth and start, it'll probably go okay. And so I think that that's a really, really, it seems obvious, but a really useful thing for everyone to know. It's just, you know, you can train to be brave. And I think that also goes for the career advice as well. Like, I was scared to become site lead. You know, that, like, I didn't know if I could do any of this. Like, I didn't know anything about, like, managing budgets and real estate and legal and vendor management. Like, I didn't know any of this stuff. But, you know, I forced myself to do it. And I think that's a useful lesson I also learned in my career is, if I'm very comfortable, I'm definitely not growing. It's only when I'm uncomfortable that I'm growing. And again, it's obvious, but, you know, I think there's even a tie to working for a very large organization like this. Because, like, you know, I could be comfortable as a developer. Like, if I think about my first few weeks at Barclays, you know, when I came in and I, you know, found the package system and I can only install this software and I can't install other software, I could make myself more comfortable by going to work for a startup again, right? Where I can just do whatever I want. Because that's something I'm familiar with and I have no constraints. And I don't have to talk to people as much, like, from all around the world because we have a global team. But I didn't do that. And I think I became a more well-rounded professional and a better human for it. Because, you know, yeah, I was uncomfortable. Like, I had to learn how, like, large organizations work. I had to speak with, like, colleagues from all around the world. I had to learn to negotiate with people. I had to learn how to influence people and build a little bit of a network to be more effective. You know, working in a large group and trying to deliver something, like, yeah, you got to interact with others. Like, absolutely. And I could avoid all that by going to find, like, you know, a small little team where I don't have to talk to anyone. But staying the course, sticking with it, working through that discomfort, I think I came out of it stronger. And I think that's been a theme of my career, is that I don't know why, but I haven't tended to run away from those things. I've tended to run towards those things. And I think that's been massively beneficial.
Yeah, that's a great idea, to run towards things, not just from things. And I thank you for being my guest.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
If you like the podcast, subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts. You can also contact me on hello@alica.dev. I will welcome your feedback, questions, and also tips for the next guests.